And now part 7 of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey, read by Damien Lewis. Sir Percy has slipped through Chauvelin's fingers at Le Chat Gris, and so far avoided the careful trap set for him by his arch-enemy. Pursuit.
About 5 minutes later, Degas returned, followed by the stooped figure of an elderly Jew in a dirty, threadbare gabardine. His red hair, which he wore after the fashion of the Polish Jews, with the corkscrew curls each side of his face, was plentifully sprinkled with grey. A general coating of grime about his cheeks and his chin gave him a peculiarly dirty appearance.
"Is this the man?" Chauvelin asked.
"Non, citoyen," replied Degas. "Reuben could not be found, but this man here seems to know something which he is willing to sell for a consideration."
"The citoyen tells me," said Chauvelin peremptorily to him, "that you know something of my friend, the tall Englishman whom I desire to meet."
"Yes, Your Excellency," replied the Jew. "I and Reuben Goldstein met a tall Englishman on the road, close by here this evening. He wanted to know if he could hire a horse and cart to go along the Saint-Martin Road to a place he wanted to reach tonight. When I was about to offer the wealthy Englishman my horse and cart, Reuben had already spoken and offered his half-starved nag and his broken-down cart. They started about 5 minutes ago."
"Do you happen to know which way my friend went in Reuben Goldstein's cart?"
There was a long pause. Chauvelin, without further comment, took a few pieces of gold out of his own pocket and held them out towards the Jew. The Jew shot a quick, keen glance at the gold in his interlocutor's hand.
"What does Your Excellency wish to know?"
"Whether your horse and cart can take me to where I can find my friend, the tall stranger who has driven off in Reuben Goldstein's cart."
"My horse and cart can take your honour there, where you please."
"To a place called the Père Blanchard's hut."
"Your honour has guessed?" said the man in astonishment.
"You know it?"
"I know it, Your Honour."
Chauvelin, without another word, threw the pieces of gold before the old man, who knelt down and on his hands and knees struggled to collect them. When he was again on his feet, Chauvelin said,
"How soon can your horse and cart be ready?"
"They are ready now, Your Honour."
"How far can you drive me in it?"
"As far as the Père Blanchard's hut, Your Honour, and further than Reuben's nag took your friend, I am sure. We will overtake them on the road."
"Very well," said Chauvelin. "But remember, if you have deceived me, I shall order two of my most stalwart soldiers to give you such a beating that your breath will perhaps leave your ugly body forever. But if we find my friend, the tall Englishman, either on the road or at the Père Blanchard's hut, there will be 10 more gold pieces for you. Do you accept the bargain?"
"I accept."
"Now, go and wait outside," said Chauvelin, "and remember to stick to your bargain, or by heaven I will keep to mine."
With a bow, the old man shuffled out of the room.
"You, citoyen," he said to Degas, "go back to Captain Jutley as fast as you can, and tell him to let you have another dozen men, and bring them with you along the Saint-Martin Road, where I dare say you will overtake the Jew's cart with myself in it. There will be hot work presently, if I mistake not, in the Père Blanchard's hut. We shall corner our game there, I'll warrant, for this impudent Scarlet Pimpernel has had the audacity, or the stupidity, I hardly know which, to adhere to his original plans."
Never for a moment did Marguerite Blakeney hesitate. The last sounds outside the Chat Gris had died away in the night, and she quietly descended the broken stairs and slipped out of the inn. The night was fairly dark, sufficiently so at any rate to hide her cloaked figure from view. She hoped by keeping well within the shadow of the hedges and ditches which lined the road, She would not be seen by the patrols, which he concluded were still on duty, nor by Degas when he approached with the reinforcements. As she followed the cart, she lost track of time. The loneliness was absolute, and already the dim lights of Calais lay far behind. Far away on her right was the edge of the cliff, below it the rough beach. Marguerite wondered at what particular spot on this lonely coast Percy could be at this moment. Then, through the stillness, there could now be heard distinctly the sound of horses' hooves on the muddy road coming towards the cart. Marguerite had been expecting Degas and his squad to overtake them, but these horses came from the opposite direction. Realizing the cart had come to a standstill, Marguerite crept a little nearer. Two soldiers on horseback had halted beside the vehicle, and one was saying,
"Less than a quarter of a league beyond Miquelon, we came across a rough construction of wood, which looked like the hut of a fisherman. It was empty, but there was a charcoal fire and a couple of stools. We took cover and waited."
"Well, and did you see anything?"
"About half an hour later, two men came along towards the edge of the cliff from the direction of the Lille Road. One was young, the other quite old."
Marguerite's heart almost stopped beating as she listened. Was the young one Armand and the old one de Tournay?
"The two men presently went into the hut," continued the soldier.
"You saw nothing of the tall stranger?"
"Nothing, citoyen."
"Yet he is on ahead of us somewhere. Here, there is not a moment to lose. How far is that hut from here?"
"About a couple of leagues, citoyen."
"Keep beside the cart, and direct the Jew to drive straight ahead. Then stop him within a quarter of a league of the footpath. See that he takes the most direct road."
While Chauvelin spoke, Degas and his men were fast approaching. Marguerite heard the soldier giving directions to the Jew. Then she crept back behind the hedge as Degas and the reinforcements came up. All fell in behind the cart, and they started down the dark road. As in a dream, Marguerite followed on. The web was drawing more and more tightly every moment round the beloved life which had become dearer than all. She had abandoned all hope of saving him, but might yet have the happiness of dying by his side. At last the cart stopped. They had come to their destination. No doubt on the right, somewhere close ahead, was the footpath that led to the edge of the cliff and to the hut. Heedless of any risks, Marguerite crept up quite close to where Chauvelin stood, giving orders to the men.
"If the royalist traitors are still alone, all of you take cover and wait there in dead silence, and do not move on pain of death until the tall Englishman arrives. Then, and only then, rush the hut when he is safely within its doors. But not a sound. I do not wish those royalists to be on the alert. The firing of a pistol or call on their part would be sufficient, perhaps, to warn the tall Englishman to keep clear, and," he added emphatically, "it is he whom it is your duty to capture tonight. And remember, you will implicitly obey my instructions, for your lives depend on it."
"What about the Jew, citoyen?" asked Degas. "If he gets scared, he'll probably either make a bolt for it or scream his head off."
"Ah, yes, I had forgotten him," said Chauvelin. "Here, you, whatever your confounded name may be," he said to the old man.
Benjamin Rosenbaum, so it please your honour," he replied, trembling from head to foot.
"Well, you miserable coward," said Chauvelin, "you had better shuffle along behind us. Here, Degas, tie this handkerchief tightly round the fellow's mouth."
As the footsteps died away along the footpath, Marguerite flitted noiselessly behind the hedge. She must have run on very fast, and had outdistanced Chauvelin and Degas, for presently she reached the edge of the cliff and heard their footsteps distinctly behind her. But they were only a very few yards away, and now the moonlight was full upon her. Her figure must have been distinctly silhouetted against the silvery background of the sea, for in the next instant a hand dragged at her skirt and she was down on her knees. Something was wound round her mouth. A voice murmured with affected gallantry,
"Dear me,
This is indeed a charming surprise. And Marguerite felt her hand raised to Chauvelin's thin, mocking lips. Marguerite lost all notion of time and space, for nature mercifully deprived her of consciousness. When she once more realized her state, she felt that she was placed with some degree of comfort upon a man's coat, with her back resting against a fragment of rock. That the end of the journey had been reached, she gathered from the fact that she heard rapid questions and answers spoken in a whisper quite close to her.
Have the men taken cover?
Yes, citoyen, Degas replied. As you ordered, they will not stir until the tall Englishman comes. Then they will surround and overpower the five men.
And the lady?
Still dazed, I fancy. She's close beside you, citoyen.
And the Jew?
He's gagged and his legs strapped together. He cannot move or scream.
Good. Get close to the hut and leave me to look after the lady.
As Degas crept away, Marguerite felt a pair of thin, talon-like hands take her own and hold them in a grip of steel.
Before that handkerchief is removed from your mouth, whispered Chauvelin close to her ear, I think it right to give you one small word of warning. Inside that hut, if I am not mistaken, your brother, Armand Saint-Just, waits with that traitor, de Tournay, and two other men unknown to you for the arrival of the mysterious rescuer. If you scream, nay, if you utter one sound, or attempt to move from here, my men will seize Saint-Just, de Tournay, and their two friends, and shoot them here before your eyes. As for the Scarlet Pimpernel, what is he to you? Believe me, no warning from you could possibly save him. And now, dear lady, let me remove this unpleasant coercion from your pretty mouth. You see, I wish you to be perfectly free in the choice which you are about to make.
Chauvelin removed the handkerchief from her mouth. Oh, that fiend in human shape! He had gauged her very thoughts to a nicety. She could not give that signal. How could she deliberately order Armand to be shot before her eyes? Suzanne's father, too, he an old man, and the others. No, she could not do it. The early hours sped on, and yet it was not yet dawn. Below, the lonely beach was silent. Suddenly, from somewhere not very far away, a cheerful, strong voice was heard singing, God Save the King. Echoing round the vast immensity of these lonely cliffs, it was impossible to say from which direction came that voice. Marguerite heard the click of Degas' gun close by. No, 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 no! God in heaven, this cannot be! With a wild shriek, she sprang to her feet. Armand! Armand, for God's sake, fire! Your leader is near, he is coming! He is betrayed! Armand! Armand! Fire in heaven's name! She was seized and thrown to the ground. She lay there, moaning, bruised, not caring, but still half-sobbing, half-shrieking. Percy! God's sake, fly! Armand! Armand! Why don't you fire?
Stop that woman screaming! Hissed Chauvelin.
Something was thrown over her face. She could not breathe, and perforce she was silent. The singer, too, had become silent. Chauvelin, with a muttered oath, shouted,
Into the hut! Let no one escape alive!
The soldiers rushed the door, then stopped dead. Not a sound proceeded from within. The hut was empty.
Damian Lewis was reading Part 7 of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. The book is abridged by Sarah Kilgariff and is a CSA Word production for BBC Radio 2 by Clive Stanhope. Next week, the fugitive royalists may have escaped, but the Scarlet Pimpernel must be in the area somewhere. Chauvelin is still hopeful that he can catch him.